reading of the legislation committee. We have barely a quorum, but a quorum we have with Legislator Burrows, Carpen, and Myers. The first item on the agenda, and thank you, Mr. Burrows. The first item on the agenda is an item held over from last week, because we just wanted further explanation of the basis and the terms of retention for Stuart Glass, who's here, to be retained as a consultant with respect to the County of Westchester Public Utilities Agency, which is affectionately known as CalPUSA. Mr. Burrows,
very simple.
Tell us how great Stu Glass is.
Stu retired. Okay. We don't have a replacement yet. We need somebody there. So we're asking for the waiver to keep him through the end of October. Stu has graciously agreed to do that, $20,000. So it's a short-form contract. We are in the process of looking at outside agencies, looking at perhaps somebody in the law department to be a placeholder when Stu leaves, but it's imperative Stu stay there because we don't have somebody picked out yet at this point in time, and there will have to be some sort of transition.
And so we're being asked to give him a waiver. Any questions?
So this is for the period of September and October?
Correct.
I know we
actually started August. He retired August 15th,
so 2.5 months?
Right.
Is there any other questions?
Yeah, I have a question from Bob out there.
Yeah.
CalPUSA.
Yeah.
Question?
Not a question, a statement, and then I'll make a motion to approve this. One of the things that we discussed at last week's meeting was having CalPUSA to come speak with E&E, and we separately, E&E, had requested CalPUSA to come because we just want to learn, we meet with them periodically. And I spoke with Tom Geiger last week. They wanted us to do this first so Stu can come speak with us at E&E. We worked with Stu for many years on E&E. We think the world of Stu and the work that he has done for CalPUSA and on behalf of the county. So having said that they will come once we do the waiver and that's passed, I certainly move that we approve the waiver for Stu.
We do have a memo that was sent
to
the
ANC.
No, we didn't. We had not seen, but now we have chair of CalPUSA, Tom Geiger, explaining the need for Mr. Glass. So is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you. We have been joined by legislators Murkowski and Burton. Next item on the agenda.
Mr. Chair, I think just for George's purposes and everybody else, everybody knew Stuart and everybody knows there's never a problem with us. What we want to make sure is from the administration's point of view, if we're looking to extend anybody, if we're looking to hire anybody for short terms, to have a presentation, to find out what the real need is, because we want to make sure that we didn't, obviously we took advantage of doing this unemployment to get people off of the payrolls as opposed to reinstating them.
Right.
Okay, so that's been passed. The next item on the agenda is, which we'll dispose of quickly, is a request to consolidate vital statistics registration districts. And this deals with consolidating the Bedford Hills Correctional Facility primary registration district with the town of Bedford primary registration district. And since these are in the in Legislator Harcum's district, mm-hmm. I'll ask him to address.
Do we have anything in our packet?
Yeah,
we do.
It's the cover is a.
That's a memo from Bob
to Steve. This was a request that came to us from the town of Bedford. I think one of the reasons this comes about is if there's a birth at the prison when they need to register those. There is a move to consolidate these vital statistic districts, and this was a request for a resolution from the town of Bedford, which we complied with. I understand that this may be an issue elsewhere where there are prisons as well, so we may see another one of these come back from another community.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to comment to very briefly. My prison is all male, and so it seems unlikely. the same situation will occur?
Well, it may be with births, but there may be an interest in consolidating the vital statistic districts.
Vital statistics, marriage. You may, if same-sex marriage passes, you may have two prisoners getting married. You have to register for marriage.
Well, or a garden inmate.
I'll be performing.
Garden inmates are not allowed to. They're not allowed to. But just in terms of registering statistics, the move is to consolidate. This was a home rule request asking for our support. And so you see the resolution. It's pretty straightforward. And I would move its passage.
And all we're doing is a resolution to the state legislature to consolidate these two.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a second. Any further discussion?
No voting registration going on here? That's another issue.
Not for some of the
youth have a council too.
No, there was a law passed that says that the inmates are considered residents of where they came from, not of the...
For purposes
well, that's
only
for the census.
Of,
regis-
yes, of redistricting, not for purposes of census.
Not for purposes of census.
The U.S.
Right,
census
that's right.
Prisoners still counted in their community, so Pete and I have very serious concerns about that. We appreciate that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Census they want.
Okay, the next topic and the longest topic on the agenda today is our continuing discussion of the ANC and various proposals to quote reform unquote, which we're not sure what that means yet, but it certainly doesn't mean abolition. So I want to comfort everybody past that issue. But there's a question of, you know, can it be improved? Can we simplify all the laws that go into the ANC process? Should it be made more transparent? Does it need to be made more transparent? So what I thought we would discuss today, or what we agreed last week we would discuss as a subsequent topic, would be the legislation that was drafted in the event ANC would be abolished, just to get an understanding of, you know, all of the different aspects of ANC that are involved throughout the county charter and other local laws that deal with ANC. And is that your understanding, George? That's what we're going to do today. Okay.
My understanding is that you wanted Joe Mary here and me here to explain how that part of the process works with ANC.
Well, let's start with you guys first.
Yeah.
Joe Mary, have a seat. And we have Linda and Mary Lynn here, and we'll do you after them. Is that okay?
John, just so that I'm aware, because I know that number three is where you say James Misano, obviously it should be Republican caucus. Is that what you're talking about?
We're talking about four.
This booklet at this point in time? Or?
What do you mean by booklet?
Well, the memo that we as the caucus sent.
No.
We're not talking about it. Okay.
Which number are we on?
We're on A and C generally. Three, four, and five altogether.
Oh, altogether.
Joe Mary, can you just, so that the members of the legislation committee and those who aren't here, unfortunately, have to read the minutes, and those in the room, to describe, you know, the role of your group and what you do to get a contract to that stage to the Board of ANC.
Well, I can start with the contract or I can start with the resolutions.
Start with the resolutions.
Okay, so every department that needs something that involves money or an exemption has to create a resolution. It comes to my department. We then read the resolutions. I know this sounds very silly, but we do read them for content, and if they sound correct, if they're missing something, if they're understandable, we then go back to the department and have them correct whatever it is. The resolutions are then distributed to the pre-board members. Usually on Tuesday. Pre-board members.
Yeah, who are the pre-board members?
Jim Robertson. There's someone from IT which has not yet, it used to be Kay Foster. She has retired, so I don't know who that's going to be. Finance, we have Dennis Kelly. We have Budget, Pat Haggerty. We have three or four members of the Board of Legislators, your staff that comes to the meeting. Ann Reisner is there. And my department, not that we're members, but we just, you know, do the computer display and whatever. Any questions that those members have,
go back to the department.
Right, their voice there. If we know the answer, we certainly share it with them. If it's, we we don't know the answer, we write it down, we try to get the answers for them, and then we have a whole week to do that, and then the following Thursday, all those resolutions are voted on at ANC by the Board of ANC, which is the county executive, the chairman of the Board of Legislators, and DPW commissioner.
And generally what happens, John, is, because I know Larry goes up there to the board, right?
Not the pre-board, not usually on Friday.
Okay.
But we have somebody from the minority, so.
Okay. And then the questions generally will go either to me or Christine Sculpey if legislators or legislative staff have a question about something, which then the department, usually to the best of its ability, will answer. Usually it's a technical question about, like a lot of them this year were when some of the contracts that we awarded this year were at a reduced level of funding from last year. What impact does this have on the service given? What in particular may have been eliminated from whatever that program or that contract was to get the reduction, that type of thing. And then those answers, they're sent to staff. I assume they get to all of you, because if we don't answer them, generally the chairman, your chairman, will come up there and ask that something be held over, you know, until we get the answers. And sometimes, unfortunately, you know, particularly with some of our departments a little bit short staffed, because, you know, we have eliminated deputies in a lot of departments, I know sometimes people think we're nefarious and just holding on to information. A lot of times it's just a question of trying to get the right person in the department that really knows the answer to the question and have them respond and get it to you in time. So, and sometimes it is a little nefarious.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, in the days when I ran a relatively small town government, the process for awarding a contract was that the town clerk opened the bid, certified the results of the bid, and certified that the recommendation she was making on the bid award was to the lowest responsible bidder. Am I wrong about that?
Well, for the county.
Okay, I'm talking about from the town's perspective.
No, town.
That went to my office as the supervisor. With the accompanying documentation, copies of the bids and all of that. I would almost always say, yep, she got it right, and it just go on the board's next agenda for approval, which was routinely given because we had all been kicking these around for a long time because we didn't have that big a government, at which point I was authorized to sign them. Mr. Robertson was here last week, and walked us through an elaborate process which struck me as what happened between me and the town clerk. I was wondering what would happen if we did the same thing. That is to say, it was came from the commissioner of whatever department as being the lowest responsible bid and then went to the county executive. Eliminated the process. Limited the ANC, but also eliminated the process of the Board of Legislators having any further oversight. What, in your view, would be the problems that we would be generating for the county by doing that?
I think this is going to sound really silly, but a lot of contractors make bids and they are not correct. They have math errors. They have not viewed all the addendums.
Why don't you back up and tell them, because I asked this question. You know, when the bids come in, how does that process work? Is it Joe Mary in a room? Is it? So why don't you explain the whole thing?
So on every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, we have public bid openings, and you're certainly all welcome to attend.
I hear they're very excited.
They are. We open up the bids there. We make sure that they have a bid bond, because most of our jobs are over a specific amount that require a bid bond. And we read the bids. And we, at the end of the bid opening for that particular contract, we say, oh, it appears that ABC Company is the low bidder. And that's all we say. Then we go through the three low bidders. We go through their package and make sure they have everything that we need, whether it's a minority certificate, contractor's acknowledgement, whatever's in that package, we make sure it's all completed. 9 times out of 10, there is a mistake, it's not completed, we take notes. At that point, we take all those books and we give them to DPW, either to the engineer that's in charge of the job or to the commissioner. They go through it and they make sure that this contractor bid on what they wanted, whether they wanted item four and they voted on, they bid on item three, or they took this into account, or they have a Buy America certificate. They make sure that what they need, the specifics, their technical stuff, is all included and correct. Then they come and say to me, ABC Company, yes, is indeed the low bidder. Then we go back to the company and we say, well, now we need a performance bond. We need you to complete all these things that are incorrect. That could take anywhere from 2 to 4 to 6 weeks. After we get all that information, we then submit that whole package to DPW, to law, to finance. At that point, the commissioner of DPW, if it's his bid, unless it's DEF or Parks or whatever, then they say, yes, okay, this is now ready to be awarded. They prepare the resolution, and then it comes to my office to be voted on by ANZ.
But to get back to, if I understood you correctly, which I'm not sure I did, because it sounds like what you're saying is, if you eliminated the board of ANC directly and just had the bid process, the way
open the bid, send them to the county.
Open the bid, check them out with the department, then send them to the county. Exactly.
Yeah, I think you could do that. You'd have to change the charter. I don't know what that does in terms of legislative input at that point.
Well, that's point number one.
Right. You know, so you would have, because you don't have a, whether you're outvoted or not, you're at the table, and at least you have the rights of a member of that board to the information or whatever it might be. And you may be in a situation down the road with a different county executive who may say, well, you gave this function to me, and you can read about it in the papers when the bid's done. So
it's called openness and transparency.
Well, and if what we have is A and C really should be the O and T committee for openness and transparency, as Legislator Rogowski just said, I'd also asked about the impact that it would have on the county, and what Joe Mary just pointed out is that we have a second set of eyes besides the department. We have ANC staff itself reviewing things like Buy America and reading the matchup between what was bid on and what's in the RFP or the contract specs or whatever. That's a second set of eyes. Some people would say that it's a second set of eyes for doing good work. Other people would say it's a complete and total duplication and we should get rid of it. Well, I guess, of course, it's tough to ask you, well, how many mistakes have you caught? And, you know, what have you really saved us? That sort of thing. And
I can honestly say every resolution has a mistake.
Okay.
Everyone. Even yours.
And so, therefore, if that's true, and I'm taking it that while Joe Mary is being honest to us, and not necessarily, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but is being honest and forthcoming, I don't know whether she's speaking totally for the administration, because the administration's, the county executive candidate did propose a series of changes during the campaign. So what I just stated is essentially an extreme position, which is not the administration's position. I take it the way George is putting
on. You mean to abolish the board of ANC?
Yes.
That's correct. I don't think the county executive as a candidate, nor now, would advocate abolishing the board of ANC.
Okay. So now it's a question of adjusting what goes on to a more streamlined, a two steps instead of three steps process. Is that more or less?
No, I'm not even sure that. I think his platform and what he is looking to do is achieve, as you say, more openness and transparency, getting the contracts and the resolutions up on the website before, so the public can see them before the Thursday ANC meeting. That sort of thing. Also, the limiting the size of some of the contracts at the Board of ANC. It's not so much the size as the time. I think that one of the concerns the county executive had as a candidate, probably has as a county executive, is binding perhaps a future administration to a long-term contract, so that something that's going to go beyond a five-year period or something, you would want the ability to have that vetted maybe before the entire Board of Legislators, so that an administration on its own isn't binding maybe two administrations down the road to something with a five-year that's got 2 5-year renewals.
One of the issues that came up a while ago that created some controversy is the Valhalla homeless shelter and the lease to volunteers, the contract with Volunteers of America, and why that didn't come before the board. How would any reform address it? What was the, why didn't that become?
I think that
I know there was some talk. I talked to one of our members who's not here today because he's campaigning for an election tomorrow.
Jim Maizana.
Tomorrow. And maybe the other one also was involved. We're actually advocating that there was a lawsuit there against the then county executive because it was improper for the ANC board to vote that through without coming before the full board. Do you know what do you know what the issues were?
The issue was, again, it was a question.
It was time, right?
Yeah, because they didn't do it as a lease, even though it quite frankly is a lease. Mm. Because leases do have to come to your legislature for more than 5 years. So I think that's correct. Is there any lawyers here?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So what they did there is they claimed it was a contract for services, even though you know they're using space in the building, and they made that contract for 5 years with 2 5-year renewals. So because that you can do through ANC, and I think that more than anything prompted you know the county executive when he was a candidate, because that was quite
that
frankly
was his district,
right? Yeah. To say, you know, those are the types of things that really, you know, that is an abuse of the powers of the Board of ANC, because you're really trying to circumvent it by taking something that was a lease and being a little bit creative and saying, okay, it's really not a lease, even though we're giving them space.
Any other questions?
I'm sorry we weren't as lengthy as...
I got a question for Joe Mary. What about the non-bid...
But I felt like I was in law school last week when I was...
Yeah, where's your PowerPoint?
Non-bid contracts. What about contracts that aren't subject to public bid? Do you go through your office?
No, those are short-form contracts.
Well, short-form...
Short-form contracts are $20,000 or less.
Right, but aren't there contracts greater than $20,000 that don't involve public bidding that go through you or don't go through
Then the departments would do an RFP.
Right.
And then... They handle it. They send out their specs that they want. They advertise them. They get their RFPs back. Then they rank them based on what they're looking for. And then they would create a resolution to say, okay, we sent out 20 RFPs. We had 10 respondents. 5 were good, and this is the one we chose because of their reason.
And you review those at all in your group, or
she just read the resolution?
I would imagine that if the department told me that the vendor or whoever was good, I would go with that.
John, just one point, because I think it's a very important part of the procurement process. You sort of glossed over it, but I assume it takes time. To the extent the public works projects particularly have any kind of significant undertaking, the matching up the bid to make sure they actually follow the specs, and whether it's bidding Energy Star windows or is item 4, the departments, I mean, they look at that carefully, I hope, because that to me is a major, you described it, but that to me is a major, major part of the whole process. Bid comes in, they win, well, are they giving us the windows?
You have to make sure they're bidding on what you want.
Right, exactly. So I assume that could take 1, 2, 3, 5, 6 weeks. It could take whatever.
I mean, when the bidders, after they submit their bid, and they assume that they're the low bidder, and we tell them, you know, we don't do anything.
Right, so you don't look at that. It's subject to, it goes back to the department.
And then we tell them anywhere from 2, 6, 8 weeks that it will be awarded then.
Right, because we assume here, to a large extent, that... we expect to see certain things and say, whether it's energy efficiency, whatever, that someone in the process is making sure that's what they've been to. Or a losing bidder might come in and say something.
It's the same thing with an RFP. You put it out, you want what you want, you need to make sure that that's what they're bidding on, not what they want.
So you describe the process, but that could be the time-wise. That could take 2 months before it comes back because they had to really go through all the documentation to make sure they're reading the specs.
Well, then we have to get the contractor. They come in. And when, like, they might not have the corporate seal on. Right. So when we're finished with it, if their technical stuff is okay, then we're good to go. But I don't know anything about item 4 versus item 4.
And they're going to build the design we gave them to build. That's the building we want.
You had a wonderful PowerPoint this week. It's education for all of us. Jim had a section that dealt with contracts that are subject to the procurement policy adopted in Act 23-19. 1992, and the fact that there are exemptions to that. Do you get involved in those, Joe Mary, at all?
Sometimes there are exemptions. It could be a sole procurement. And it's best interest of the county. Sometimes if it's a medical issue, there's no bidding on that. But again, that's a legal issue.
Yeah, that's,
so he reviews those.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, generally that decision's made by the law department as to whether it, you know, you can not circumvent, but you can exempt.
Well, you're exempt from the procurement policy.
Can I have one more question?
Sure.
From the decision, you know, it's low. The basic law is lowest responsible bidder, but the concept of sort of lowest value, you know, value added, the best overall, is that part of our procurement law? So that's really not.
The law says it has to be the lowest responsible.
Lowest responsible bidder, and so that would take either state law or could we that's something to go beyond the pure dollars, right? Right. So right now it's pretty. You're the lowest number.
Right.
If you're not a criminal or some other thing, you're going to get it.
Even when you take, if you want to knock out the lowest bidder because you don't think they're a responsible bidder, it's difficult because if they, quite frankly, if they've met all your criteria about the bonding, the insurance, women minority businesses, all that stuff, you know, you really have to come up with a real reason. And the only real reason could be they did a previous job for you that they botched completely. You know, and even then, I think you should. That's a question you should ask Jim Roberts.
Yeah, but there's discussions, I think, in the whole procurement world about some other standard other than simply lowest responsible bidder, right? But we're not there yet.
It's an interesting question because one of the things that does come up sometimes is that you will get a low bid, and because other contractors will tell you that guy's just lowballing it, and then you're 70% through the project, and all of a sudden you get some sort of change order, and you're kind of stuck at that point. Although even with that, you could hold him, the contractor, accountable if. If you could see that he clearly, the change order has nothing to do with some unusual or unforeseen circumstance, because that's the only time there's supposed to be a change order. By the way, one of the things I think, because the legislation that Gordon was holding up was something that it goes back about 7 or 8 years. I think one of the things that we had in that proposal also was to require change orders that went over a certain percentage to go back to the legislature. I can't remember because I don't need to handle
that.
But that's the contract over 5 years. But what we had noticed as legislators going back some time is that there were a number of these instances where very large change orders came through. And we were wondering, what that was about. And that was an attempt to sort of hopefully curtail the number of change orders coming through, making bidders understand up front, look, if you're going to come in and have a change order down the road, you're going to have to go back through a whole other process going back to the legislature to approve it. And, hopefully it makes them sharpen their pencil.
Yeah.
On that point, though, if you're...
Could go the other way, you're right. You could put fluff in there because you're afraid of a...
Well, but then they come in second or third. I'm just wondering if, when you review, Joe Mary, the contracts for a DPW project, the specs have A, B, C, D, and E, and you're laying them up, do you go to the detailed extent of saying, well, this contractor submitted a quotation for 4 tons of item 4, but in fact everybody else has done 9 tons? That you leave to the departments. And do they do that in writing, or do they say, we've checked all of this and it's appropriate?
I have found recently that they have been calling the contractor and saying, bringing them in to just try to minimize any kind of additional work to make sure that we're all on the same page as to what we want, that I want this wall here and that's what we're bidding on, and they discuss it.
But they bring in the lowest responsible bidder at that point, even
before
though they're not
awarded.
Negotiate contracts.
I'm sorry?
They're not supposed to negotiate contracts.
Well, they're not negotiating. That's the price.
But post-bidding, there's not supposed to be any negotiation.
They're not negotiating. They want to make sure that what...
That the bidder understands this is what's requested.
Right.
And on
So where do these rather large change order examples come from, that's the process.
Here's where they
usually
are. I don't know that there's been that many.
So this is an historical concern that's probably
correct.
been worked through as
that and emergency
publicity on this point.
And emergency contracts were the other thing.
Yeah.
Right. But I think a lot of the emergency contract stuff's been addressed already with some changes in the law. right? Didn't we? Weren't there changes made a few years ago? Anyway, but getting back, Bill, most change orders come about. You're doing some storm drain work, and
you run into rock.
Yeah, you found rock that you didn't think was there.
That's the classic change order.
Yes,
I've been removing 4 tons of rock, and there are 12 tons of
right.
rock, and that's that. And nobody knew.
Right.
And that's a change order, and that's
right.
fine.
John?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, but on that point, is there statistics that are kept in ANC about a specific bidder as far as those change orders are concerned? So, in other words, that if you have the bidder, the vendor X, won 10 bids, and out of all 10 of their bids, they had a percent change order of 80%. So every time they submit a bid, it has a change order. Is there any statistics kept on that? Because that would mean now they're not really the lowest responsible bidder, even though their work actually might be very good, right? That they may just be underbidding jobs to get the job and then go backwards on the change order.
I do not hear that.
No. My guess would be that, you know, whoever is the
department.
Yeah.
Right.
They have a knowledge, you know, this guy three times we've had to change.
And that's why I think they've been speaking to them.
Right.
To make sure that we said 4 tons and we're going to do 4 tons, and we were in agreement with that.
Yeah, because that, Mr. Chairman, I mean, that's certainly things that we do and our great budget staff and administration.
Well, that's something we could, there's no reason why we couldn't keep that stat. I mean,
right.
It's not.
I mean, because then that would say to someone now that they're not responsible, right? You know, if we looked
right.
at that. So we do that when we get to the final contract payment.
Bob
we use as that.
Bob Boland could probably tell you, because he looks at all of them, and he could say, you know what? He used to call George this guy. 6 change orders in the last 2 years.
That's exactly what he's doing.
Right, but to do something, you know, a mechanized process to even help do that level of policing, if you will, to help improve their statistics and how they move forward on that. I mean, that's something maybe statute-wise that we need to look at and see how that works.
Any other questions for Joe Mary or George? Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
What, you wanted a drill?
No.
Sorry.
Exactly.
You do. Twist it.
Mostly. See ya.
Did he
invite you to the
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
These are all three to sit together.
Yeah, it was quite a cool situation. Absolutely.
Okay, you spent a lot of time drafting this legislation, right?
Yes.
So maybe you can tell us, you know, how, just take us through each of the provisions of law that would have to be changed
So you're going through the abolishment legislation.
Well, yeah, the other one, what was the other one?
Because the other one was just the reform.
So
the
just reform pursuant to the request that we had been given from the Board of Legislators, and I believe it was the chairman of the board who gave us a specific...
Let's go through that first, then.
That's a July 19th.
What are we going through, John?
July 19th.
That's a good question. There's a July 19th memo, charter amendment regarding the Board of Acquisition and Contracts.
So we're not focusing on the abolishment of this.
Right. I don't think, what does this deal with?
This reform.
This reform
just was very specific. There were four or five requested changes.
Right. It's on page 3, by the way.
Exactly.
Right.
And so that's all that this particular piece of legislation does.
Okay, so let's go through each of those.
What are we looking at right now?
It's a July 19th memo.
Okay. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Marty's sandwich smelled good.
Yeah, right. That one's leaving.
The first one was to remove contracts that are approved by the Board of Legislators from requiring those contracts to also be approved by ANC. provided that there's a specific designation of execution contained in the approval from the Board of Legislators. One thing that I guess Jim Robertson from our office was indicating as well in support of this particular change was that there are certain contracts that have to go before the Board of Legislators.
Right.
And the approval is mandated either by the laws of Westchester County or some other provision of state law. What was somewhat duplicative was that those contracts that already received Board of Legislative approval were then thereafter going before the Board of A&C. And just for the specific designation of execution authority.
Right.
That whole process can be really consolidated by having the Board of Legislators just do them itself, and actually at the time when the Board of Legislators gives the approval, actually provide this designation of execution authority, thereby eliminating the need for it to go before A&C again.
Just on that particular point, and if we enacted that particular portion of the statute, that does not diminish, and does that diminish the Board of Acquisition and Contracts power in any way?
Well, the only thing, though, is that right now the way that the law currently reads is that they approve all contracts. So, from a technical standpoint, I see what you're saying. It's really duplicative as to what the Board of Legislators is doing. But since they currently have that authority, I'm not so sure that it wouldn't be considered somewhat of a diminution of authority to have it eliminated.
So essentially, these are contracts approved by the Board of Legislators,
yes.
And they go to the A&C Board just to designate who's going to sign them?
Exactly.
So it does sound like a duplication of effort.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sometimes delays the whole process of getting the agreements forward.
Mr. Chairman, there was also a concern for the transparency, to at least put it into a system that people had access to, that they could see. There was a printed agenda. They knew that there was a meeting taking place. So although it appeared to be more, perhaps more tracking or the designation of, authority to execute, one of the concerns was getting it into a system where it would be transparent.
Is it transparent before the Board of Legislators, though? It's on the agenda, it's discussed, it's voted on?
Well, all right, not necessarily with short forms, for example.
Would this cover short forms? No, because
short forms have historically, at least in recent years, going to A&C.
Thanks.
Yeah.
These are contracts that the board would get and approve.
Yeah.
And it just goes to A&C to get the authority to who's going to sign.
Right. I'm just expanding it to include contracts that we would actually initiate.
That wouldn't come before the entire board for vote.
No.
I don't think this doesn't cover that.
A short form that was initiated from a department, the Board of Legislature, any other department, wouldn't go in front of A&C either.
No.
Right.
So right. I mean.
Yeah. In fact, if you look at the other opinion, this section actually Jim Robertson helped us with, because of course, as you know from last week, he is the expert in all this in connection with the contracts. If you look on page 3 of the August 18th memo with respect to short form contracts, it specifically says that short forms are a nickname given to contracts whereby the boards or commissions are empowered to execute without a specific resolution going before the board of A&C.
Mm-hmm.
So there are contracts that the county does enter into which do not go before A&C.
Yeah, that was just a preference that we had as a board to put in front of the public our business, whether it was short form or not. Otherwise, we could execute contracts undercover, so to speak, and unless people knew to ask for them or ask for the details of them, they didn't have things like a meeting or an A&C agenda meeting to look
for. So you're saying in number one, I think Legislator Ryan is saying under number one, mm-hmm. you wouldn't include a short form contract in number one, because that would not be voted on by the whole board.
That
still should come through A&C, so it's transparent and open.
Well, again, the short form contracts don't go through A&C. The only thing that A&C does with respect to the short form contract is give the authorization to the particular department heads for the amount.
But it's the level of transparency, I guess, that it's on the agenda. It's seen. Right.
Is that the point?
That's all it was. There was no requirement.
No, but a short form don't go on the contract on AC at all.
Except for the
now they don't. Perhaps now they don't. What I'm saying
now
is
the designation of signatures.
No, the designation of signatures would go on the
yeah.
Board of AC.
What, maybe, Bob, maybe you can clarify. We just made a decision.
There are certain contracts, $120,000, that we, one legislator, for transparency purposes, put on ANC.
Put it on the agenda.
For what purpose?
Transparency.
No,
for designated, in particular,
to get them to approve the contract.
No, we had the authority to approve.
So, oh, I see, for their visibility.
So it's just on the agenda, and here's a contract.
We had the approval, we had the authority to approve. And what we did was we put it on the agenda, and it was actually acted on by the board that day, by the three voting members of the board. It was actually acted on. The record shows that it was acted on. Had that not occurred, we had the authority to unilaterally execute that contract. But we chose, for transparency purposes, to put it on so all of Westchester could see that the Board of Legislators, as a cost center, was executing a contract to with whoever for whatever services were called for.
So the question is on that, is the suggestion that what we do is we make every contract that is executed either available or do you say, are you just saying it needs to go in front of the board of ANC or just being on the agenda? I'm just trying to I understand for the transparency of where you're going. Is it better?
Anything that satisfies the there's a concern for transparency. If we have a vehicle that satisfies that. I know me personally, I'm not wedded to the ANC agenda, the ANC meeting, but I think it's important, especially in the climate of recent years. I think it's important for contracts large and small to be available to the public in some way.
So it's a listing of the contracts.
Like you could say, since the last ANC meeting, the following contracts have been approved by the law, or have been executed by the law. No, we do, but the
question is, from a transparency purpose, what Mr. Ryan is suggesting is that we have some kind of mechanism that is in place in statute that says that everything has a level of visibility. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I think that if we were to do that, that's a good piece of public policy.
Yeah.
I think Bob had it, Mr. Chairman. Bob,
yes.
Bob had it.
Thank you. Right,
but that's still not the level of transparency that Mr.
Yeah,
is referring to.
I would just go a step further and make it the policy of the government to put out for the general information and view of the, information of the public that they're aware of.
Make it part of
the
website.
What's the procedure we have right now that we're using for these short forms?
I don't know that that's done. If it is fine, then I'm satisfied. But I don't know that that's
no,
done.
No, there's not a a matter of course, which I agree with Mr. Ryan is suggesting, the legislative Ryan is suggesting, is that that maybe part of our statute says that information needs to be placed on the website for availability for the public to view, right?
So we need a provision that deals only with short form contracts that says they should be made publicly available on a county website?
Well, we can also have it included on the board agenda, ANC agenda, for informational purposes. So right. It's not something that the board, you're not asking that it be amended to include a board to approve,
right.
Board of ANC approved, just merely to put
oh, no, 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 no.
For public
right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
On a agenda or monthly basis, and how often would you like to do that?
I think that is the one.
It could be monthly, it could be quarterly.
Prior to F or after they're signed?
They already had the authority to be.
So it's afterwards.
So it's afterwards.
Only after execution.
It's a report.
Nothing that we're contemplating, it's just execution.
And I think, yeah, making it available on the county's website, the AAC right now would be a suggestion.
As soon as reasonable.
We're okay with one, and we would make a tweak to one that would say short form contracts should be placed on the ANC agenda and on the website.
I know that Ken would agree. I mean, there is nothing that a chairman of this board contractually should enter into that there should be any hesitancy as to whether or not the public, you know, was to see that this was done.
That'd be correct.
Okay, two.
Yes, one of the other requests was to remove from the authority of ANC to require expenditures exceeding $10 million to have those contracts approved by the County Board of Legislators.
How many of those would have bypassed the board and go right to ANC?
I don't have a figure of that. Really? I mean, the one that obviously comes to mind is the $45 million contract with the healthcare for the inmates at the correctional facility. That's a $45 million contract. So I think that all the suggestion was to make it consistent with the bonding authority right now that says, you know, if we do a bond over $10 million right now, that needs to go to a referendum. Mm-hmm. Right?
We're not suggesting a contract go to a referendum.
No, we're not suggesting that, but we're suggesting at least that the board have the visibility and the process of going through the same level of discussion we would go through with any bond.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. To that point, I think we have to have a mechanism to capture some of the ones that fall outside the system. And I think the healthcare is the perfect example because, you know, people will agree or disagree on the process, but that was one that had less transparency than I think we all would have liked. That's an example. But on the other hand, last time Jim Roberts said there were a lot of routine ones that, especially in the social services area, that were above that watermark, that didn't necessarily, did the board want to spend its time on those kind of things? So I think the challenge is, you know, do we just set the threshold at a dollar amount, or do we want to put in other criteria in there as well?
It's hard to agree on criteria. It's easy to agree on a dollar amount, whether it's, you know, over inclusive. It's just, right?
I mean, well, then I think it would be helpful, though, to have a number so that we know what kind of workload we and our staffs, you know, would be taking on.
Can our staff do that? Can
you know, is it two contracts a month? Is it 25 a month? You know.
Can we get that?
Yeah.
Ann or Bob or Olivia?
Olivia.
Yes. Okay. Let's see that number. Because maybe we do need some additional criteria.
And also in connection with that, one thing that was not requested, but again, Jim Robertson indicated that it was kind of necessary, was that if we're going to have some sort of dollar amount in connection with that, right, that there be also, and you'll see in number five, some, and maybe the board wants to kind of tweak this or language or whatever, in connection with in the event of an emergency situation, that the county executive would still have the authority to exceed that amount.
Doesn't the emergency apply across the board?
There is emergency language across the board right now.
There is a contract. Right. But if you remove from the Board of ANC the approval authority for those that exceed $10 million, and it has to come before the Board of Legislators, just correspondingly you want to at least address it in the emergency section that the county executive would still retain that authority when there was an emergency.
Any questions about that one? We want the number of. We want to see what the number of contracts.
And Mr. Chairman, I mean, just thinking about this in general for an emergency situation. If there was an emergency situation that came up, and if the threshold amount remained at $10 million, that would have to be one heck of an emergency.
Absolutely.
That would be the case.
Unusual.
So I think that right. It would be. It would be very unusual to have a threshold level of that. So I think that you just say that the threshold level is any contract over whatever that number is, 10 million is a certain suggestion. But any contract over $10 million would need to come in front of the board, because there can't be an emergency that would need a $10 million check written, you know, right away. It just wouldn't be.
Yeah,
that would be a big problem.
But that was Jim Robertson. He specifically thought that that was a concern. I'm not sure if you know there's been he has historical information for that. You know, because he suggested that, because that wasn't at the request of the board. But when he reviewed this, he said, "Well, okay, then we also have to address emergency situations where, you know, we would need to execute a contract and we maybe not have enough time to go before the Board of Legislators." This would still go to the Board of ANC. It would not be just the county executive, but it would be with the approval of ANC.
I mean, unless there were, perhaps, if the board was more amenable to this, some indication that the mere fact that you were taking the amount out didn't negate the fact, maybe even in the committee report or something like that, that the issue with respect to emergency contracts still held without regard to, you know.
Maybe we need some data as to how many emergency contracts.
Okay, exactly.
The medical center one was, the healthcare contribution one was an emergency.
It was done under the emergency powers?
Absolutely.
Well, let's find out what others.
And again, so if the, with the threshold level being, it is, we should do that research. But. And almost all the versions of, Mr. Chairman, and almost all the versions, whether it was the version of ANC reform, the emergency provision is always one that grabs a lot of attention, because there is certainly opportunity for its use to be exercised.
Well, the June 14th memo from Jim Misano as minority leader has a very extensive set of proposals with respect to the emergency powers and how they can be exercised. So maybe we need to take a look at that proposal. I don't know if you've looked at it yet.
No, we haven't.
In fact, you should run it by Jim, too. Jim and Roberts.
Okay.
A lot of it's getting on the list, but
it's on page 7. If you look on page 7, a lot of it talks about, essentially having a resolution that's a written declaration of an emergency submitted to the Board of ANC, that an emergency contract should not have a term in excess of 1 year, and defining what the term emergency means.
Yeah.
So that's on page 7. That was from...
And that goes to the
legislative Misano.
Right.
The suggestions there, that goes to an emergency.
And where you get the emergency contractors, like there's a list that's supposed to be adopted.
Well, looking at the definition, unforeseen occurrence or condition whereby circumstances affecting public buildings, public property, or the life, health, safety, or property of the inhabitant was to require immediate attention and cannot await competitive assistance.
That would be catastrophic.
So we need to consider whether we should adopt, because that's not in the law now, right?
No.
What's the definition in the law now for emergency?
We just have an emergency contract provision.
Which section is it?
It's section 167.171. And it just essentially says the county board may make additional appropriations, but it talks about emergencies, unforeseen circumstances.
But does it define them?
Requiring action to protect the interests of the county and its citizens. And then, notwithstanding those provisions, because it's usually the county board may make additional appropriations for emergencies, then subdivision 2 talks about notwithstanding, the county executive, with the approval, may execute these contracts without receiving bids. there.
But who declares the emergency in the existing one? Who can declare the emergency? Must be.
I mean, this provision just simply talks about, you know, to meet emergencies, 167.71 talks about unforeseen circumstances, emergencies, etc. But the county board has the authority to do that, and then the county executive, with the approval of the Board of ANC, can execute those contracts.
There's actually similar language in the general municipal law in connection with entering into emergency contracts, and by case law, there have been.
So, you know, both parts, the county board has the authority under 171.1, and the county executive has the authority with the approval of the Board of ANC to, in an emergency. So, you think under existing law, only the Board of Legislators can declare an emergency?
ANC can declare an emergency.
Yeah. Right.
So where is that? I don't see that.
Well, I mean, it essentially says notwithstanding. I mean,
notwithstanding 161.11.
We can check more with respect to declarations of emergency.
Yeah, we need more information on that.
Bob's going to get it.
Okay. So we need to look at the definition of emergency and what provisions we need to deal with emergency, supplementing two. Three specifically dealt with the B-line bus system, and I think, Mr. Chair, it was your idea to ask for this. Were you concerned about?
Well, we were concerned.
Because of that, the issue of the cutting of the roof?
And cutting of the roofs and making modifications, because it's not just the cutting of the road, it's making modifications to the transportation system, whether that's increasing fares, whether it's decreasing services, et cetera. I'm trying to understand how that works without any approval of the board necessary. So it may be an item that would be best segmented or separated or severed from this particular thing, but to move on a separate path to understand, you know, from Federal Transportation Authority what the provisions are, what is in the statute as far as Congress is concerned, because most of the times Congress, when it passes legislation, enabling legislation, especially on funding, like federal funding for transportation, requires the approval of the local legislative body to make those changes. And right now, there's concerns that doesn't necessarily happen.
So where's the change in the law to address this issue?
That's right in the general first provision in 161.01. That's one of the additional language.
Yeah, I see. So I think you want to table this one for a while?
What I'm suggesting is that we may sever this part as far as the discussion right now. Because I believe that we have to do some additional work as far as understanding with the FTA and the federal guidelines and state guidelines on the dollars and how they come into the county. You know that the county, when the county accepts grant funding from federal sources like the Federal Transportation Authority, they don't always come in front of the board. Right? Sometimes the dollars are accepted directly into ANC, and that would be we got to sort through that. That's my
suggestion. Yeah. So I'm not sure where we're going with
my suggestion is that right now, to sever that particular item from the discussion at this point in time.
We'll eliminate that.
Just for discussion. What happened to your seat?
Not from the proposal, just from our current discussion.
Okay, four is...
I'm sorry, just for clarification. Are we eliminating...
For the current discussion, yeah.
Just for the current discussion, right. Not for the next draft of this piece of
paper. Yeah, for the next draft.
Yeah, for the next draft of the document.
I'll fill it. Okay.
Okay, four.
So let me... And then we may need to revisit it.
Four is require the approval... Prior to approving any amendment to the cost, is submission of a schedule or backup information.
And that was at the request of the board that be included. So the Board of Acquisition and Contracts amendments to contracts with respect to cost could go before the Board of ANC, and this would require that the contractor provide that information as to, you know, the impact, you know, why there was an amendment to the cost of the contract. So that would be a prerequisite prior to the approval by Board of ANC.
Question?
Yeah. Oh, we earlier discussed substantial change orders as being a cause for a certain degree of the concern about ANC as a whole. I would read this as any change order. Is that correct? You don't think that's just a bit broad?
The only thing is I'm not sure that all change orders that don't have a specific term relating to the financial aspect actually go before ANC.
But those that do, if it's a $5,000 change order, goes before ANC?
Anything that would have monetary effect on the company.
Anything that would have monetary, right, regardless correct. Of the amount of money.
Right.
Returns to ANC for reapproval.
That's correct.
As long as there is an amount of money associated with it.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay. But the others, particularly the backup documentation, does that seem a little overly broad, or what exactly would be meaning with that?
Well, I think currently the way it was explained to me, because again, forgive me because I'm not involved in that process, but what I understand is that there usually is some backup that's presented to ANC in connection with why they're making the request, what the request is about, why the change is necessary. And so that's why I don't think there was that much of a concern that information was being corrected.
Well, no, I think the third point is what really would seem reasonable. If we've eliminated the issue of money, and the answer is anything that has a bespoke cost goes. The schedule, however, if you elongate the schedule by, say, 2 months, wouldn't that really be a matter of some substance? I would think it would be. Particularly if a project that was in my district, if you take a certain project that closes a road or closes a bridge, and you say it's going to go on for 2 months, we had a bridge in the town of Cortland, the Quaker Bridge, that went on longer. I did not know that until the village manager told me about it, and there had been some discussion about that. I would at least like to have known what the process was instead of just hearing about it. This would bring it to the attention of the board. And that's not necessarily bad, but I'm not altogether sure that it rises to the level of a charge change either.
Yeah, well, I don't think that would require a charter change.
Well, but this whole package isn't going to require a charter change.
Yeah, the first two, I think, do.
Yes, they do.
But the schedule would not go into that same package of charter changes?
I mean, it was requested to be part of this package, so yes, it would be part of it, but...
But you don't need a referendum on that particular...
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's the question I have about these things, whether these are really rise to the level of
I'm going to come back to that question for 1 and 2, for right. certain, because...
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've got my point across then. Thank you.
Okay, so is it your suggestion we don't need number 4?
No, I think we found out that the dollar amount is always coming before, so that's already there.
But the backup.
The backup material may or may not be.
That's
the schedule. I'm inclined to think if it were substantial, I certainly would like to know about it as a member of this body. So I would say yes.
Okay. And let's look at 5, which is
the emergency.
Discuss that. That's not in the law now, then. There's no,
no.
As far as when we looked at 161.171, there was nothing in there that gave the county executive the power to execute a contract in an emergency. So
no, but what wasn't there was, I guess, you can have the county executive, with the approval of ANC, entering into an emergency contract. So it's kind of an interrelationship between that provision.
We didn't ask for this ad. This was a suggestion from Mr. Robertson on doing this, and I think that based on all the conversation that I would strike this section altogether, right?
Five. the section that's reflected by number 5, 167, 170, 13. You'd strike it. You wouldn't go with it.
No.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
But we would have maybe incorporate some of the suggestions in
the language for emergency
proposal that Jim McDonald attached to his memo,
indicating that,
which has a lot of safeguards with respect to emergency.
Right. And incorporate that into this budget.
Right.
The bonding limit that the county has in the charter is $10 million. Is that right?
That is correct.
So that if we had an emergency that would be, I mean, I'm just making this up, a substantial explosion in a sewer treatment plant that would cause us to have to do all kinds of stuff. You know, and the rules are that which deals with a single incident has to be all put together. So let's say that the emergency cost would be $14 million. Wouldn't we want to retain the ability to do that rather than, because let's assume we would be bonding them. Wouldn't we want to, in fact, keep that ability present, which is presumably not present now?
No, because it still would have to come, but this has nothing to do with the bonding. This says that if that particular issue, it was an emergency in your case, that the Board of Acquisition and Contract could execute that contract without it coming in front of the Board of Legislators. Right? That you, and now the bonding question on if we
without
bonded.
Without going to bidding either.
Without going to bidding and all. Now, I'm not sure about the bonding part of it to say, oh yes, how are we going to pay for this particular thing?
Right.
How would that go in front of the board? Would they break it up in piece? I mean, I don't know, right? I'm just suggesting that there's not a scenario that I can see that would be an emergency that would be at that level, that the board would not be willing and able, if it needed to have an emergency meeting to approve something, that it would not do so. Right?
So then am I misreading it when I see it saying that we're giving the right up to the county executive to do this without any consultation with AMC and therefore the board?
No. It would be with the approval.
Or requiring that AMC have it.
Yeah.
With the approval.
I mean, this is, again, this is mirrors the language that's already contained in the charter, except for the fact that it now just adds the language which exceeds $10 million to kind of counterbalance
So that
it's just clear, and whether or not you put it in a committee report or something like that, just so that it's clear from the legislation that by removing that, it's not mandating or taking it out of the category. Exactly.
So instead of permit, could we put require?
Where are you putting
it? Number 5, instead of saying permit an emergency, we say require an emergency.
Well, look at the language of the statute.
Well, you have to look at the statute, because that's just.
The suggestion, I think, that from what we've had from number 2 earlier, that says that, you know, if the expenditure exceeds $10 million, that contract has to be approved by the Board of Legislators. I think that kind of does it right there. Right? So if there's an emergency, the county executive certainly would communicate that to the board, that there was some level of emergency that required a level of funding, and then the board would need to act on that.
Right. That's what the provisions now provide.
Right. So, I think number 5 is just not necessary.
Okay. Thank you.
Probably today, and for at least the time I know I've been on the board since 98, I think that for this scenario to unfold and for a county executive to go to the board of A&C and with their sign off, get involved in a contract of this size, the lid would go off here on the 8th floor. As it was said before, I mean, bonding may not be an issue. What if you had a situation where you had money, you had unappropriate revenues available? You could conceivably have a county executive go and together with the Public Works Commissioner engineer a 2-1 vote authorizing the contract,
and the Board of Legislators would only have the ability to go and express their dissatisfaction and vote no, but the contract would move forward. So it's, I think that, you know, I don't know what the level should be, but I think that there probably needs to be somewhere a level where we decide that if that's what we have an emergency, then at a certain level, the Board of Legislators' approval to move forward would in fact be required.
There's also just as I'm sitting here, I'm remembering, there are also certain emergency powers that come under the executive law that give the county executive certain rights to declare certain emergencies. But again, we're talking about a catastrophic event that would probably involve state and federal funding if it's getting to something like that.
The implication is now that if the exec feels it's an emergency, it's a small situation, it's an emergency, just approaching ANC signs off on it, then you can move ahead. Mm-hmm. There's no large discussion anywhere else that kind of sets the scene and talks about what has to be evaluated and in order to get to the point of declaring that condition. You know, you just kind of read between the lines. That's the way it was drafted. You read between the lines that obviously something has happened. The exec has determined it's an emergency. They approach ANC. ANC signs off on it. Then off you go.
So are we proposing to change that at all? I don't think so.
I think the only concern is the board concerned about setting a threshold?
Is it a threshold?
And if you could pull a number out of the air, maybe the board at this point, you know, in September 2010 for this discussion, the board says, we think $10,000 is $10 million is the right number, $15 million is the right number. I don't know what the right number is, but my guess is that if you polled the legislators, they would probably tell you at some level, they would believe that their approval should be necessary before.
And for an emergency.
Yeah.
Okay. We have about 8 minutes left. What I'd like to do is just cover one more topic, and that is to answer Legislator Burton's question about why, which of these provisions requires a mandatory referendum, and then we'll go through the list of what we're going to do for the next time. We're not going to have time to get into this other tone, but we will at some point. But I think we've made some progress today on some, you know, areas that would be acceptable to the board as a whole to enact. So. My take is that 1 and 2, which takes away some of the powers of the Board of members of the Board of Acquisition and Contracts, would trigger the requirement for a mandatory referendum because we're taking away an elected official's power on that board.
Correct. And even 4, when we talked about if we are mandating that the board obtain this backup information before they can approve, and right now they have the authority to approve an amendment to the cost of the contract without the backup, that may impact their authority there as well. So, if you were to amend that language and say, you know, contractors, you know, do it a little differently, but to mandate that prior to the approval of a contract, the submission of such information be provided, that would be impacting the powers of the members of the elected officials on the board of acquisition.
On the three items, there's a couple of things. One is that I think that we might be able to, Legislator Williams, Lyndon Williams suggested, you know, maybe modification of the language in a way that wasn't going to require a level of referendum. So, for example, in number 2, when we say that we're removing from the approval authority from ANC contracts will require expenditures exceeding $10 million, it's just saying that we're putting the Board of Legislators in that mix, that it's a requirement that the Board of Legislators had to approve it, as opposed to...
In addition to the ANC.
That's correct. All right. You know, it's actually the opposite way around. We do that right now. We do that on many items right now where we have bonding that the board approves, and then ANC is the contracting agency. It's the part at the end where, you know, we made sure the contract was right and it moved forward. There wasn't an opportunity at ANC's role as far as we've been discussing throughout this time, is not to take the approval authority away from the Board of Legislators that represent the policy.
So what the chairman is suggesting is that we say, in addition to the approval of ANC, any contract over $10 million will be approved by the Board of Legislators.
I'm not so sure that changing the language, would actually affect the need for the referendum.
And that's really the question is if we, and I'm not saying, suggesting all of them, I want to do them kind of one at a time at that, to say what things are being done to, what things in that particular case we're talking about impacts the ability of ANC or any of the members of ANC. It would. It says that you would just have to do what you have to do with bonding right now, and we wouldn't need a new referendum. We wouldn't need a referendum for that.
Well, I think the question is whether or not right now the power of ANC and the power of the elected officials on ANC is that once their approval is given, that the contract may be entered. Regardless of how you're wording it, I think what you're saying is by adding an additional level of approvals that are necessary, even though it's not necessarily affecting in the first instance their power to vote, in fact is, because now their power to vote doesn't automatically authorize the execution of the contract. You're saying their power to vote is contingent upon another power. And so to the extent, regardless of how you word it, it's a diminution of their power to get something done.
Well let me look at it from a different charter provision than Mr. Chairman, if that's okay. Is that if the legislature, the legislature is the one that sets the policy, right? And we enact policy by votes on the board, ANC, in essence, is diminishing the board's power by the board. If the board took an action, voted upon something, and said this is what should happen, ANC, with two members that are elected, one only being elected countywide, the other one being an appointee, being the chair of the board, the third person being an employee of a direct report, that's actually taking power away from the Board of Legislators. No, right?
Actually, I don't see it just being the power of the elect of the county executive and the Board of ANC. I also see it as the power of the chairman of the board, because you're still an elected official required to be part of that board. But the way that the whole charter currently works, if it was something new that the Board of Legislators was requiring, or like there are instances where something hasn't been addressed by the Board of Legislators, I think I'm going over my minute, but...
No, so you have a minute.
Oh, okay. That the way that we currently have it is, for right or for wrong, it's what the state established as part of the administration of county government. And so whenever we come into the play as to affecting what has been already established, and that's when you get into the municipal rule law and affecting what currently exists to establish something new.
Could you just see if there's any precedent in this area?
We can. We'll look into it.
So just to recap, and I have a minute only.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're looking at number one, seems to be acceptable, except we want to make sure we have a provision that short form contracts will be put on the agenda and put up on the website, right?
Right.
And then we're going to look at the number of contracts that have been over $10 million. And what else are we going to do with two? Two is related
emergency.
To five. We're
going
to deal with
language.
The emergency and look at the language in the Maisano proposal.
Right. And the declarations of emergency.
Right. And the basis for declaring an emergency. We're going to leave out three for now. That comes out. And four we're going to keep in without a dollar limit.
And then you also said you want to have a review while we're including Maisano's proposal into this with respect to emergency language. You also wanted a review of Maisano's proposal separately.
Yeah, I think everything else in that proposal is done. That's the thing. I don't want to take any more time, but what?
Well, we can put that in. We can go through that.
We'll go through that next time. But I think the other provisions in that proposal have been put into effect.
I think you also wanted to know the number of contracts, emergency contracts,
yes,
that exceed
exactly.
$10 million. So that was one of the other.
Well, and all contracts.
No, all emergency contracts.
All emergency contracts.
Exactly.
And also all contracts over $10 million.
And all contracts.
Because that was one of the other discussions.
That's two data points we need.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Contracts over $10 million
and emergency contracts.
Mr. Chairman, if we can keep on the table, unless it's the sense of the committee that that it doesn't want to look at it. There was an issue that I raised about a week ago, which has to do with the powers and authority of the county executive and the Board of Legislators. If you recall, I think the practice has been for years where the county executive, through a writing, empowers or authorizes a department head, the head of a department, a board or a commission, to contract for the amount that's set forth in the writing.
Yeah.
And I think the practice over the years has been that the chairman of the Board of Legislators has kind of been fit into that department head mold, and has, and in my view, inappropriately, the legislature and the chairman together, viewing them together, have been on the receiving end of writings that empower them or authorize them, and these come from the county executive, to execute, to perform in this area.
Not A&C, but
I don't believe
A&C,
right.
Not from A&C.
Right. I don't believe that the county executive, through a writing, has the authority to empower or authorize or restrict the board in this way. And I think I think there's a practice throughout down the years, and right, Bob? I mean, you go back probably longer than anybody in the room. The practice has been that the chair of the legislature has kind of been shoehorned into this mold. But in no other way is this recognized. But in this particular case, the county executive, especially at the beginning of each A&C new term, new session, issues a writing that so authorizes, so empowers all of the department heads and others to do this, and lumped into that, once again, I believe inappropriately, is the legislature, because I personally don't believe that branch has the authority to empower or authorize as they see fit the legislature. So I think it's worth our looking into. And I'd like to keep it on the table until we decide.
I think what you're talking about.
Do you need some examples?
It's 161.11.
Probably 11B or
C. Okay, we'll put it on the agenda to look at next time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So moved. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Environment people, please don't go far. We're going to start right away. Thanks.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's not mine.